All right, we are ready to go. So just to let everyone know, Dr. Sonia Pagura is not able to be with us for this discussion, but I think we can still have a discussion just about data collection, about outcomes, and I think it would be interesting to just hear what type of relationship the IPRC and the CENSR, the Canadian Network for Children and Youth Rehabilitation, what kind of relationship has existed in the past and what the plans are for the future. So I know that we do have some folks on the line from IPRC, also from UDS, as well as some clinicians. And I would kind of like to open it up at this point, just as far as a discussion, just related to some of the data collecting that's going on here in the United States. A lot of us are using the WeFIM, and I'm kind of curious as far as what type of relationship, a working relationship, have we had with the CNCYR group?
Well, I think I can answer that from the IPRC leadership perspective, and we invited them to be a part of our group at the beginning, and it was thanks to, I believe it was UDS who introduced us back when Kevin Gibson was a part of the team and suggested that we get together because we were all struggling with outcomes across the world. So thanks to the UDS connection, we were able to connect and have them share some of our initial conversations on outcomes and outcomes management. And this would be Bonnie. I apologize for not introducing myself.
That's great. Now, as far as introducing us to at least their trials and tribulations for collecting data, do we have any other type of working relationship with Canada, or is this all new?
I don't know if UDS is on the phone. I know that they participate in some of their providers participate. I'm not sure. I know that we've had some work together on sharing of information and participation related to the outcomes committee, but I don't think we've done any other significant work together.
Okay. All right. I know UDS.
This is David at UDS.
Hi, David.
Hi, how are you? We have had in the past numerous Canadian facilities that utilize the WeFIM. At this point, there are not any, and the main reason for that is because of Canadian law. They're not able to send us data. So a lot of the presentation last week mentioned CHI-HI, which is an organization out of Ontario that handles a lot of data. And we work very integrally with CHI-HI on the adult side, but they're the ones that have to keep the data over there in Canada. So because of that, our Canadian subscriber base has pretty much been eliminated. And that's been something that's been happening over the last 3 or 4 years. We did have a really good, you know, group of Canadian facilities that took part in the WeFIM, but they don't anymore. And that's mainly because of the privacy laws up in Canada.
Okay.
This is Cindy, the IPRC director, and we are in the process of chatting with CENSR a little bit more and have invited them to send representatives to some of our other committees. So we're hopeful that as that progresses, that we'll have some more Canadian representation on our best practice, on our education committees, as well as their participation in our outcomes committee.
Yeah, actually, we do have a Canadian presence with the best practice group, and so that's been wonderful. So so it's nice that we're actually getting out there. So if we look at the United States and our data collection and kind of what we can glean from that, I know UDS, we're actually getting ready to do some data sharing, David, correct? And just where are we with that?
I'd have to defer that to Kathleen.
Okay.
I know we're still working hard to get everybody to agree. And I think we're getting closer. I just don't know exactly where that stands, and I do apologize for that.
This is Cindy. I can speak to that. With the UDS unblinding project, where some sites have decided to work together to unblind some of their data, we are in the process, and we're closing in on the end of getting everybody to agree to the terms and pushing it through a lot of different hospitals' legal departments and modifying the terms where we need to. So we currently have 11 or 12 hospitals that are interested in participating, and some are they're all at different places in their agreement level. But that project is moving on, and we're getting closer to getting ready to implement it.
Great. So this will be our first attempt as far as trying to get some type of common benchmarking and all that good stuff. So that's pretty good. Does anyone want to share as far as what their facilities are doing with any type of data collection? Data collection that has actually been the result of like a change in clinical practice or a change in safety or any type of service delivery. So does anyone want to share what's going on in their facility? I know that we're using the WeFem quite a bit. What about some other outcomes from an outpatient standpoint? Any type of outcome tools that are people have felt to have given strong results or strong inputs that they can make decisions by? I know the PDCAT was one, I think, that a lot of people use. Is there anything else out there that people are finding in some of their outpatient clinics, or even if it's diagnosis-specific, that they're using, just to start the discussion? Okay, I know our audience is a little on the slow, on the small side, so there might not be a lot to pull from for this discussion. So, does anyone have anything they would like to share, whether it's related to outcomes, whether data collection, or anything related to the IPRC with our different groups? We do have an outcomes group, a best practice group. Does anyone have any questions? Since we've got several people from IPRC leadership on board, this might be a nice opportunity.
Hi, and this is Sue from Children Specialized. I'm curious if anybody's using the Bailey for any data collection and comparisons. That topic keeps coming up, and we hear a lot of people use it, but that there's nowhere to compare yourself. And how are people using it if they're using it?
Is anyone out there using the Bailey? I know HSC uses the Bailey.
So this is Valerie at HSC. I do know that our occupational therapy department in particular uses the Bailey scales, but I don't believe that we're able to utilize it for data collection at this point. I would be very interested if anybody is, however.
Yeah, and I often say the NICU follow-up clinics use it, but I don't know what anybody's doing with that data. Mm-hmm. If they're just showing the patient change over time or if they're using it for anything else.
That's a great question.
Yeah, that is a good question. And maybe that can be something that gets fielded to, I'm just taking notes, Sue, to the outcomes group just to see what they know about that. And maybe we can just post something online just as a follow-up at iprc.info.
Because I'm looking to see if people are just using it to assess where the child is developmentally at that point, or if they're actually using it for outcome or research data, or how it might be used.
This is Cindy. Prior to accepting this position, I spent some time working in early intervention in Northampton and Lehigh County in Pennsylvania. And I know that the evaluation teams use the Bayley for kids to qualify in the early intervention setting, but then it was not used continually as like a benchmarker to see progress. It was really used in that setting as an evaluative tool to get scores and levels to justify treatment.
Right, and that's what I'm wondering, if people are just using it in that capacity or if they're actually using it to look at outcomes over time for that younger population.
Right. Not in my experience.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions related to outcome tools, whether it be program or diagnosis specific? Any questions as far as what other people are using and finding success with, or even just challenges?
This is Judy Miller. I'm sorry I was late joining the call, so if you've already talked about this, please just go, I'll catch up later and listen. But we haven't implemented fully yet, the PDCAT, but when we were looking at participation, we were using the COPM, or we're thinking of using the COPM because that frames our episodes of care. And I was just wondering if anybody else uses the PEMC, why, and if there's any more information about that, because I'm not familiar with it.
So is anyone out there using the PDCAT and the PEMC-Y?
Not.
In particular, what would you like to know? Maybe we can put something out there as a follow-up as far as questions.
Does anybody know why Sincere chose the PEMCY? What they felt its strengths are, or it's what value it adds?
I'm not sure, but that's something I can send an email to Sonia Fagora and see if she can shed some light on that, and I can post that on the forum.
That would be great, because we're thinking for our outcomes, and we're mostly looking at outpatient on this, but we know we need a functional tool, and a lot of people seem to be gravitating to the PDCAT. But in terms of the other aspects of life and how your priorities set up and your quality of life and your participation in your community, it's hard to figure out a tool that can work across the lifespan.
And you're using the PDCAT or considering use in for who? What discipline in particular, or across disciplines?
Across disciplines, all populations. We're looking for a big tool to kind of use for all outpatients, to use in a benchmarking way at certain points along the lifespan and how often. I was interested that the speaker said that she was they're going to do it at 5, 10, and 16. And, you know, I don't know where we're going to go with this. We haven't fully decided, but we're working with our outcomes department on this. But is anybody else doing, like, big picture population data over time?
This is Sue from Children Specialized again, and we've started to do the PEDSQL, both
okay.
through our physician services, and I've started to roll it out through the therapy services as well. And, you know, the idea is to look at it longitudinally, sort of population health-wise.
Yeah.
But we're at the very early stages of it. We're also considering looking at it sort of pre and post episode of care in the therapies.
Okay.
knowing that there's going to be a lot of things that impact it, but because we'll have the data in there, we're probably going to take a look at it.
Okay. And again, I am not my outcomes committee is working on this. I'm not so strong. Is this a self-administered self-report tool, or is this something that has to be clinician-administered?
No, it's a survey that the family completes.
So they're
given the survey, and it can be done either by the patient or the family, depending on the age.
Okay.
And they hand it to the clinician, and we just send it in. You know, we take a look at it to see if there's anything that we need to address specifically during the evaluation. But otherwise, it goes into a database.
Okay. That sounds really good.
Yeah, that does sound good. So it's a database at this point right now that your facility, only your facility, could look at, correct, at your own data?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, we're working with some folks to look at it from a research perspective as well, so I don't know all the details of all the pieces of it. But I know that they're also looking at it compared to medical complexity. There's a medical complexity scale that's being used, and off the top of my head, I don't remember where that came out of again. But that was just shared with me in the last meeting, so I think that's an interesting piece to look at as well.
I agree.
But I think we're looking at that more from a research perspective and sort of longitudinal population health type information. But we've rolled it, and it initially started with our physician services, and sort of on well visits was the idea, and now we're looking to, like I said, put it into the therapy areas for pre- and post-therapy.
So you're from Children's Specialized, right?
Yes.
So you guys do primary care too?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's special care, so it's not, it's not any patient.
Yeah.
And it's also, right now, it's we're moving it out towards the developmental end and all, but we're going to eventually move it out across all the physicians, ambulatory care services.
And for kids that live really far from you, do they have a pediatrician or a family practitioner of record in their community?
I would say yes.
Okay.
Any other questions related to outcome tools, outpatient related, program related?
And the only other one I would have, this is Sue again, would be if people are looking, especially PT, with the implementation, if you've implemented the torticollis guideline, if anyone is looking at any specific data on that. So for anybody that's not a PT, there was a national guideline put out for torticollis, a pathway, and I'm just curious if anybody's looking at any specific outcome data using that pathway.
This is Judy Miller from Gillette again. We have not implemented the APTA clinical practice guideline. We developed our own, which is largely consistent, but there are some ways it differs that's consistent with how our program runs and what our physicians involved in the program want to see. I don't know what their data, I know they are monitoring data, but if you wanted to email me, I could forward you on to the clinical educator that's working on that.
Great, that would be great. Thank you, Judy.
Mm-hmm. All right, so it sounds like just as follow-up from the IPRC standpoint, we definitely want to get information out there related to the PEDICAT, and we're definitely going to be emailing Dr. Pagura. And it also sounds like we want to get some information out there related to the use of the Bayley and how are people using outcomes. And now it sounds like we just want to also do some follow-up just related to torticollis outcomes and what are people using out there. So these are definitely things that we can follow up on related to the IPRC website. I have a question related to outcomes, and it's more on the inpatient side, and it's related to the complex child. What are folks using for outcomes related to children on whether trach or vented or the very young population?
That's a really good question, Anne. It's Sue again. We are currently using the Bailey, and that was part of my reason for that question is how are people using that? And I'm not sure that it's the best tool.
How are you all measuring burden of care? But that's kind of where I'm going with that population.
Yeah.
Or is that your concern?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I mean, we do have feeding outcomes that we look at. Since most of our rehab kids that are inpatient are here for feeding and vent weaning, so from a physician standpoint, they do look at vent weaning, percentage of kids that are weaned. And we also, like I said, have feeding outcomes.
Okay.
And part of that was change in practice. We implemented the SOFI pathway, which is supporting oral feeding for fragile infants. So we're looking at how our feeding has changed. The kids have gotten more acute, but we're also looking to see if our feeding gains have improved by using that pathway, which is an interdisciplinary pathway used between nursing and speech primarily.
Okay. All right. So you've got a little bit of homegrown tool mixed in with some standardized tools.
Well, the SOFI is actually a pathway that's out there, but what we're looking at is just their percentage of increase in PO.
Yep. Thank you.
And this is beyond my scope of understanding. This is Judy again. But I know our neuromuscular team is looking at the EAT, and I don't know what that acronym stands for, but it's trying to identify kids with progressive neuromuscular disease and when they start needing intervention from speech and OT with regards to feeding, and they start, you know, trying to prevent them getting into the pneumonias as the trigger. Again, that's about as much as I know about that.
Huh. Interesting.
This is Liz from DuPont. In rehab, we have our own outcome measure, like outcome scales that we have used for years and years, although we are not in love with them. So we used to WFIM, and I think we're probably go back to that.
Okay.
Does anybody use the 0 to 3 in that population, the 0 to 3 WFIM?
I don't think we did when we used it in the past.
Okay.
You have used it?
We used to have the WFIM probably about 10 years ago, and so I think we're going to re-implement it.
Including the 0 to 3 or no?
I'm not sure. I'm not on that committee. I'm sorry.
Okay. We keep going back to thinking about that, but have not.
About using 0 to 3? Are there a lot of other facilities that use it?
I don't know if anybody from UDS can speak to that, where you're at with that right now. I know that you were potentially going to make some changes or look to do something different with that, but I'm not sure where that's at.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Sue, this is Ann. We're in the same boat. We're debating whether to use that 0 to 3 WFIM as well. Is Dave on the line?
I am.
Do you have an idea, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot, just the use of the 0 to 3 tool through WFIM, you know, as far as how much it's used compared to the other WFIM?
Right off the top of my head, I know that it's a lot less than the traditional WFIM. As far as what percentage less, it's significant, but I don't know exactly what it is.
Okay.
You know, if there's a consideration to do comparison with that, just like you do with the other WFIM, in terms of
with the appropriate data, yes.
Benchmarking, okay.
If we had the data, we could. At this point, it doesn't look like we have enough data to be able to do that, though.
So that's really the limiting factor, is not enough participants providing that information.
Correct. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is Cindy from IPRC. As a clinician in an inpatient setting, I use both the LEAPM and the 0-3 LEAPM. And the problem that we had was for those, you know, very young or the very complex kids, they made no change or very little change on the LEAPM. The 0-3 did offer much more of a sensitivity to that scale. It had a little bit more quality questions. It did have it had some nice scaling. We did find it helpful and helped us to sort of identify both some change and some goals. And I think it helped us in our discussions with parents to sort of help them to see the change that has happened. So I do think that it's something that can be valuable.
So we did, this is Sue again, we did it a little bit to trial it on the outpatient side with our under three when we were trying to look for some information even with our torticollis kids.
Mm-hmm.
And we were seeing changes in terms of the scores. I think our question was, you know, were those changes significant or were they based more on, you know, the child's development and maturation anyway, on age? And I think that that's where we got stuck.
That's tricky in that population because change happens so quickly and development is so rapid.
Right. So that's sort of where we got to saying, is it really providing us any information? But I think the fact that you've mentioned using it to on the inpatient side to develop some goals and help with discussions with parents might be of value even, you know, with or without the scores.
I think it was helpful for us.
Thanks. And where did you use that?
I used to work at Good Shepherd Inpatient Pediatric Unit.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions related to outcomes, data collection in general, even if it's related to just service delivery in general, wait times, benchmarking? Inpatient or outpatient? This is Cindy. I'm curious to the group, how often do you collect outcomes in the outpatient setting?
This is Sue again. Unless the clinician needs it to develop their plan of care, if we're using an outcome tool, it's pretty much at eval and discharge.
Okay, and is there any sort of data that's being pushed on the part of, like, insurance companies or payer sources?
Not directly. Anticipate that to happen, but have not been asked for it directly yet.
Okay, thank you.
Not from a global perspective. From an individual patient perspective, yes, but not from a global perspective.
Sure, thanks.
This is Judy at Gillette. The only true outcomes tool we're using right now is NOMS from ASHA. There's individual test retests that may be specific to a protocol for a specific population or may be used for individual child, but we aren't using that systematically to evaluate our program, and that's what we need to do and want to do. So I feel like we're very much in the infancy of trying to look at this.
And this is Sue again. We also use the NOMS on outpatient for that specific patient population, the pre-K. And the only other thing that we do on a regular basis on outpatient, I think, is for speech, we do the STAT, the screening for autism. But that's
okay. Literally
just a screening. It's not really an outcome tool.
Any other questions or sharing? Diagnosis specific or a particular outcome tool that you have a question about, thinking of using?
This is David again. I do have a IPRC-related question, if I could ask it.
Absolutely.
I deal with a lot of facilities that are currently not using the WEFM, not familiar with the IPRC, and I really do want to spread the word about everything that you guys do. At this point, all I'm doing is giving them information and leading them to your website. Do you have anything additionally that I could email these people, an introduction to your organization?
Dave, this is Cindy. You can certainly direct them to my email, which is
okay.
Cindy, C-I-N-D-I, at IPRC.info, and I would
okay.
be happy to have a chat with them.
Okay.
Or they can also call our number, which is 914-573-4772, if they prefer to communicate that way.
Okay. Thank you.
No problem.
Any other questions, comments, sharing?
I was just reminded, we use, it's Liz from DuPont, I'm sorry, we just started using the PEDSQL also.
Oh, good, okay.
And how are you using it in the therapies?
We are. So they've picked, I think, different parts of the hospital and are using it for specific diagnosis. For, like, rehab, I think we use it for TBI, and so we're just starting to roll it out.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else sharing questions? This has been very good, very informative. I'm just going to go into then some reminders as far as our next webinar is scheduled for August 4th at 12 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. You will have to look on the IPRC website to see what the webinar is about. And if anyone doesn't have, if there are no more questions or anything, we can conclude this networking event.
I believe the August 4th, this is Judy, webinar is related to vestibular imbalance and the work that's being done at Cincy Children's on that. So but definitely check it out, but I'm pretty sure that's what it's about.
Great,
I'm trying to madly get there so I can be accurate.
This is Cindy. It is on vestibular imbalance, and it is on August the 4th, and it is from 12 to 1 p.m. You're right.
Yeah, and these guys have
great.
An established program. I think it'll be pretty interesting.
Great. Well, thank you, everyone, for calling in and sharing, and I look forward to hearing from everyone at our next networking event, and that includes this session.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Sam.
You.
All right, bye.
Bye. Bye.